Are you troubled by strange hockey trades in the middle of the night?
Do you experience feelings of dread about NHL free agency?
Have you or your family ever seen a New York Islanders game?
If the answer is yes, then don't wait another minute. Pick up your mobile device and subscribe to Lighthouse Hockey Podcast from SB Nation today.
Our courteous and efficient hosts are ready to serve all of your Islander needs and worries.
Lighthouse Hockey Podcasts for New York Islanders fans.
Hey folks, Brian from Amazing Avenue Audio, the show slash producer for the Amazing Avenue Audio family of podcasts. Just a quick announcement about this week's Pod of Their Own. The show ran long because of an amazing conversation, and so we are splitting it into two. So you're going to hear the first half of the show this evening or this morning, whenever you're listening to this. I'm not telling you when to listen. That would be a weird thing to do. And the second half you'll hear next week. The show was going to take a week off, but now we have a show to go up in that place. So you're going to hear the conversation kind of end abruptly, but don't worry, it's picking up next week, and we hope everyone's doing well and staying as safe as they can during these crazy times. So please stay safe, and until next time, let's go Mets.
Batter up.
Listeners, welcome back to A Pod of Their Own. This is episode 49 of A Pod of Their Own. I am Allison McCaig, and I am joined this week by my co-host Linda Cervich. Hi, Linda.
Hey, Allison.
And Maggie Wiggin. Hi, Maggie.
Hi, Allison.
We are also joined this week by now returning guest, Bradford William Davis of the New York Daily News. Hi, Bradford.
Hey, yo, what's up?
Not much, as usual.
Yep.
Not much is up. Since the last time you were on the show, things are pretty different.
Y'all remember,
I don't know if you realize
we
this, Bradford, there was
pizza?
A global pandemic.
Oh, that's right. We were supposed to go out
for pizza.
And
now we're never going to see each other ever.
No! Remember how we were supposed to eat pizza, and now none of us are ever going to pizza ever again?
Yeah.
What's
it's,
pizza?
It's not, it's
true,
not
but
wise
I am
or safe
eating
to share food.
A lot of pizza.
Just
like
delivery.
A lot of pizza.
Yeah. You said that place delivers, right, Bradford? The place you were recommending?
They do deliver.
It does not deliver to New Jersey or Westchester.
Unfortunately.
Just going to go out on a limb.
I mean, y'all got cars, right?
Yeah,
right?
I do
have a car.
What's that like?
It has Maryland plates, though, so I have a feeling like whenever I go anywhere, even to, like, the grocery store or to get gas, like, essential activities, I feel like I'm getting the stink eye from folks all over the place. Like, what's this out-of-stater doing here?
Yeah.
I actually live here. My car just has Maryland plates. Sorry. but anyway, so I wanted to catch our listeners up, Bradford, on what you've been up to. Obviously, you've been writing a lot of stuff, but I wanted to focus in on a piece you wrote earlier this month about the small businesses around Yankee Stadium and how they've been impacted by the lack of baseball due to coronavirus. So can you tell our listeners a little bit about that piece? And you actually just told us before we started recording that you updated it. So can tell us about
the updates
as well.
As we, you know, very firmly established, there is no professional sports and, you know, including no baseball at the moment. Though, you know, Major League Baseball is trying very hard, at least putting on a face of trying to restart things. But in the interim, there's nothing. And, you know, as is, you know, really so many non-essential commerce, you know, really is gone. And so that's had a, you know, really profound effect on a lot of local businesses in the, you know, in the South Bronx area surrounding, you know, Yankee Stadium. I had the thought to just kind of like go and see what's up the day that Major League Baseball announced everything. Start, you know, send a few emails out. I had actually hit up the director of their Business Improvement District, the South Bronx Business Improvement District, and he actually gave me and, of all people, Jake Mintz, who I just hit up. Jake lives in Harlem, and I was just like, you know, not too far from me. I was like, "Yo, Jake, you want to socially distant walk with me to the Bronx and see what's going on?" And he's like, "Sure, bro." And so me and Jake, shout out to Jake, took a tour around the South Bronx with with the business improvement district leader, talking to different businesses in the area about kind of what they were expecting. And, you know, it was pretty dismal. And that dismalness has been, you know, mostly proven true. Like, you know, if you're a clothing retailer, you really depend on about 6, maybe 7 months of the Yankees make the playoffs a year of foot traffic generated by, you know, home Yankee games, right? 81 of those plus again the playoffs, right?
Keep rubbing in the playoffs thing, Bradford. We get it.
it's really the neighborhood thing, and that one exists in around Yankee Stadium more than Citi Field. But yeah, like the, you know, there's if you are a you know, a bar, you know, like the Dugout Pub, for example, you know, they only open on game days, on days where either the Yankees or the MLS team, the NYC Football Club, NYCFC, play Yankee Stadium, or, you know, any other sort of sporting exhibition event. That's the only 10 days the Dugout is open, period. So what's happened? They've just been closed for months, you know? There is a courthouse nearby, but the courthouse is closed. So other bars and restaurants, like the Bronx, you know, Supreme Criminal Court or something like that, you know, is a few blocks away from Yankee Stadium. I just wanted to understand, you know, what, you know, do these businesses believe they'll exist through this pandemic? And a lot of them are very, very concerned about it. Another problem is that, they've been kind of screwed over by the, not kind of, actually very explicitly screwed over by the current federal loan process, which has tended to favor places, you know, larger businesses with institutional connections to their bank, you know, able to kind of keep them at the front of the line for small business loans. So a lot of them didn't. So actually, no one received any loan money the first time around to keep their business afloat. And the other problem is that a lot of these businesses, because of the nature of their business, only keep staff on during certain months in a year, or a lot of staff, you know. But one of the things that the loan stipulates is that you need to keep a certain amount of staff on, you know, to receive the loan and not have to pay it back. And so again, now I would generally say for most small businesses, they should just do that, of course, but like, you know, but given the very seasonal and cyclical nature of these businesses, it was, you know, it didn't make as much economic sense, to even apply. And then others, because the pandemic just so happened to hit in March, right before they were started to staff up, weren't even able to show a high amount of staff on their payroll, for which to prove that they merited a certain amount of loans. So again, you know, like they're you know, if you're a for example, if you're the Dugout Pub, which is rarely open in the fall and winter, you know, from November to, you know, March, they had nothing going on. They had, you know, no staff or one employer or something like that. You can't really, it makes it extremely difficult to make the case that now you need that you need exponentially more than you did over the last 6 months based on the current stipulations. They really need some sort of special consideration, but they're not getting it. And so, you know, as a native New Yorker, I'm not from the South Bronx, you know, but like, you know, but as someone who cares very much about, you know, communities, especially communities like the South Bronx that have been neglected for decades, really, like to see, you know, the existential fear that they may not exist beyond the next couple of months, like, you know, is just horrifying. You know, like what will replace these places? You know, what will replace these places that have been such an important part of the dynamic and feel of being, you know, going to Yankee Stadium? You know, like and that you don't have to pay for a $9 beer because you can go across the street. Like that may be gone when baseball does come back. It may not bring these businesses with them.
Well, it's kind of sad, like, you know, even if we say everything's back to normal, quote unquote, like you know, some things like that, that, you know, you might not see on like a grand scale, but the consequences are still just so much far reaching that we just might not ever know, but it's very real for these people who are trying to make a living.
Right. There is, you know, it's one of many forgotten narratives in the impact of the pandemic on sports. There are a million pieces about how athletes are staying in shape or re-ranking like the 1979 fifth round draft. but there's not a lot, you know, to the kind of touch points that you will miss when they're gone. Assuming, you know, these local and federal, you know, local federal governments, really mostly federal, I'd say, though, you know, though I would also argue that New York City even could do more, you know. One of the things I learned was that I believe there was like 17 million. I could be mistaken on the exact total at the moment, but there was, you know, a small handful of you know, of money available to, you know, for you know, an emergency loans for small businesses that the city had, and only you know, maybe like a third of it was actually allocated to local businesses. This is as of maybe, you know, 3 weeks ago, you know, when I wrote my update. But you know, the city could do more. You know, the city could open the streets more and, you know, provide these restaurants at least the opportunity to have, you know, customers come in, you know, or not come in, but rather sit outside and have some sort of like socially distanced seating available. That's what Long Island's doing. There are things that could be done even on the local level that just aren't being done for these places, you know. Even as everyone is like clearing land and sea to bring baseball back, but the baseball that comes back won't even benefit them because there'll be no fans there.
Nope.
Yeah. You know, yeah, Gerrit Cole is probably not going to the dugout pub. Like, you know, that's a catch 22. Like all these, you know, all these, essential, you know, sport, I believe athletes were actually recently today by Department of Homeland Security were declared essential workers.
Mm-hmm.
Everything's been done to essentialize pro sports, but like, you know, but very little has been done to, you know, to uplift all of the all of the legitimate business and work that has been organized around, you know, and really been a mutual benefit, you know, to professional sports. None of the tax breaks, but nonetheless, you know, an important part of the character of Yankee Stadium, maybe even the only character at this point, and with the current, you know, sort of extremely sterile, you know, take the firm out for you know, for to the press box. I mean, not to the luxury box, rather, you know, kind of feel the Yankee Stadium as.
I'm glad that you mentioned the disproportionate impact of these businesses of the federal package and the small business stipulations in that package on these businesses, because I've been thinking about that a lot lately, because I've been working on some stuff for my job, about to put my policy nerd hat on. I've been working on some stuff for my job about how to sort of reduce the, not only the health disparities, but the economic disparities that are worsening coming out of this pandemic. And one of them is that because you need to be connected to a bank in some way to be able to benefit from the small business stipulation in the CARES Act, it's disproportionately affecting minority and women-owned businesses. And many of these are those such businesses. And it's really hard on them because they can't access the aid that they need that's supposed to be for people like them. So it's really unfortunate.
Right.
Hi, I'm Arielle Demross, host of the tech podcast Reset. And I'm here to tell you about some of the stories we're following on Reset this month. Stories about how we're adapting to the pandemic with a little help from technology and science. Like, what does teaching look like right now?
I can tell you that there's two teachers right now who have been conducting their phone calls and check-ins with students from random parking lots, just anywhere that you can get Wi-Fi.
And for folks who can work from home, how is that working out?
Now it's my whole life is conducted via this internet connection.
The pandemic has even changed what you might think of preppers.
The preppers were at home, not going to Costco and waiting in line for 12 hours, standing next to a bunch of other sick people.
So, if you want to understand the new normal, how science and technology are shaping the way we live during the pandemic, listen to Reset. Subscribe for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or in your favorite podcast app. Later, nerds.
So, like you said, Bradford, baseball is, as this continues, baseball is doing all it can, in theory, to get baseball back, but they keep shooting themselves in the foot, as usual.
I'm shooting their players in the foot.
Yeah, more like shooting their players in the foot. Owners shooting players in the foot. So just today, we had an update on the situation. Obviously, there has been an ongoing fight between the league and ownership on one side and players on the other side over pay, because there was originally a plan to have the players take a prorated pay cut based on the number of games that end up being played. But then MLB wanted them to take additional cuts on top of that. And now today we saw a plan of what that will look like. And essentially, the higher pay players will take a larger cut. And on the surface, like, that may seem like, oh, okay, maybe that makes sense, but it's really just a way to pit the players against each other, almost, I think. Not to mention, you know.
Somebody made a good point, like, why do you want your biggest stars angry at you? Like, your biggest, most marketable stars, and you're turning them into the bad guy? Like... How does that help
MLB
you in the
is
locker?
So good at marketing their players, don't
True,
you know?
Duh.
Well, the goal is to get everyone to sign, like, 14-year, you know, if you watch The Last Dance, you know, Scottie Pippen deals, where they get a lifetime contract and get, you know, and they're severely overpaid. I mean, Jerry Cross is a forerunner. He should be in baseball. Well, he actually was. He was a scout for the Yankees at one point. But, yeah, the you know, that's probably the ultimate goal is to – suppress salaries by such a degree that the only way to be a good guy is to not make a lot of money.
Yep.
Well, and also, like, it bears mentioning that, like, this is all being released intentionally by ownership to try to influence negotiations, because it makes, you know, especially the higher paid players, it makes them look like they don't have, you know, the right priorities, or, you know, they're not willing to make sacrifices in these uncertain times.
Not patriots.
Yeah. And what they're not leaking are, for example, the health and safety plans that, you know, there are also reports that the Players Association is not comfortable with. And there's a good reason why, because if that's what they're releasing, then the players look a lot more sympathetic to the public at large. And I would love to see those health and safety plans, frankly, because...
Well, Maggie, you know, I've seen it. And you know what? You know what? I'll shoot you an email so you can look at it. especially given your vocation. Yes. But they're bad.
Shocking.
They're really, really bad.
Spoiler alert.
Cliff notes.
So that,
bad.
So you know, unfortunately... The thing is, because again, there's a select few people who get these things leaked. You know, there's people who tend to be, in my professional opinion, you know, I guess more amenable to framing issues in a way that is, you know, I guess again, use the word amenable twice, amenable to Major League Baseball and its owners. What we have are these summaries, at least they're more public on, you know, on the various top, you know, sporting and baseball publications. But, But the 67-page document is very long, but it's not good. I already said that, but like there's a Lindsay Adler article from The Athletic about her fascination with the term eyewash. I'm not sure if I got to read that because I actually never heard the term, but I understand it now. But it's basically fake hustle. It's like trying to look busy rather than actually being busy. You know?
Oh yeah, I know. I know how to do that. I work in an office.
Right. It's every wage slave understands it. But like it's slapping the glove out of Bronson Arroyo's, you know, hand, or the ball out of Bronson Arroyo's glove rather than, you know, just taking your lumps, running first. You know what I mean? Like that's eyewash.
Yeah.
This is eyewash, this report. It's really long. It's arcane. It's inscrutable in some ways. But in the ways that matter the most, it's bad. So a few things, just top line. The testing is the Major League Baseball's messaging on it is that testing is frequent. They will not specify how frequent it is. But I was able to, you know, do some reporting of my own, find out that the initial proposal was which was not listed in the protocol. Perhaps it should be, but was three times a week. Now that sounds like a lot. In fact, and I'll get to this. It is a lot relative to like the rest of the freaking country suffering and dying due to coronavirus. But diagnostic testing for the illness is three times a week. Now there's a problem, guys. Baseball is played how often?
Every day.
More than three times a week. And it's going to be even more during a shortened season when they're not going to want to take days off.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, are players sleeping inside the stadium? Probably not, right? Probably still going home. Are there spouses and families and, you know, grandmas living on the top floor or whatever? Like, are they under house arrest or... You know, will they be able to go out? They will, which they should, you know, as free citizens, right? but what that means is that in order to remove the vulnerabilities, you can't just test three times a week or, you know, on whatever schedule you fart out. You need to test every day to plug in the obvious vulnerability. They are not for whatever reason. They are, however, testing for temperature twice a day. Temperature checks every, you know, twice a day. And again, that sounds really good. Korea's doing this. But there's one problem with that. Actually, there's many problems with that. But the first one is many people do not show symptoms while still being infected. Yep. We don't know how many people don't show symptoms because there's not enough tests, which I'll get to in a second. but you know,
In fact, like the latest research also shows that the viral load and thus the infectivity may peak immediately prior to symptoms appearing. So that, you know, the day, you know, if your temperature goes up to 100 tomorrow, too bad, you're getting everyone sick today. So
yeah, right.
So another big problem.
So you're right. I didn't realize that you were the most contagious, but I didn't know that you were contagious. So I wrote about it in a column on Sunday. But like, you know, so those symptoms often don't emerge for 4 to 5 days if you even do have symptoms. So if you run a 101 degree fever, congratulations, you have infected all your entire team and all the opponents already, and your 60-year-old manager and your 55-year-old umpire. You know, and I don't know, given that the droplets can last in the air for a bit, perhaps the cleaning staff or something like that, you know? Another problem with testing protocol. There are three tiers, really. I mean, the better word is casts, you know, like,
yeah, let's
but they're, but like, you know, like social casts, but like there are three tiers of individuals with access to ballparks as the protocol outlines. Tier one are on-field personnel who have the most access, can go wherever they want, right? Including field. Does that include
managers and coaches also?
Right. Yeah. So managers, certain amount of coaches, players, you know, the umpires also included. Then there's tier two. So that's like front office workers, people who may need to interact with so-called tier one employees at times. And you know, so front office workers, ownership representatives, those people will not be allowed in the field, you know, but they can exist in the stadium and, you know, and in limited capacity interact with, you know, their field colleagues. But then there's also tier three employees, and that's everything from like broadcast operations. So like the examples that Major League Baseball gave were like, if you're a camera operator, you know, if you are a porter, if you're involved with the transportation of players, like to and from their homes, or from, you know, if they're taking a bus from New York to Philly, you know, that those people are also, you know, in that tier three category. Tier three is not subject to the mandatory 3 times a week testing that tier one and tier two. So what does that mean? That means that the person who is driving the bus, driving the private bus from New York to Boston, may be taking the subway back home, and have no idea that they have that they're carrying a coronavirus, or have it and then not get the treatment they need quickly enough. You know, those are the other, you know, that's an entire grouping of workers, and they don't have access. Now, I based on the protocol, that, you know, the Major League Baseball rationale is that the tier three people will not have to interact with tier one and tier two people. Like, they're not allowed, actually, you know, they're not, or tier one, especially, you know, they're not allowed to cross mingle. But like, would you want like the person again driving your bus, like, to be like, you know, exhaling COVID-19, you know,
on the bus? I would take a look at the statistics of bus drivers getting infected with the virus before anyone decides to get on a bus for a baseball game, because right. It is a very, very high risk group.
Yeah, I mean, there's such an obvious like oversight and that's me being generous and calling it an oversight.
Say one positive test won't shut down games too?
that's another thing. They're not recommending a 14-day quarantine.
Yeah.
For people who are exposed, I should say, you know.
Yeah, anyone who gets exposed will have a very stern talking to and have to think seriously about what's going on.
Like, hey, try harder. Like, you know?
Give a pep talk to your immune system. Well, let's go. Yeah, like, rub some dirt in it.
So that is contrary to CDC guidelines. That's contrary to, because I looked into this, Canadian guidelines, or, you know, if you're a Blue Jay, you know, that's contrary to the World Health Organization. Like, there's no place that has any, you know, credibility, really, that recommends not having like a strict 14-day quarantine protocol for people who are exposed, you know, even if they don't test positive. Those are just a few of the health issues. They're also like, you know, basic, like, functional, how do you play baseball if you're not allowed to, like, say, trail the runner, which is like something that's mentioned in the plan. If you're an infielder, you know, like, I don't know how you do pick off throws, or, you know, keep a man on first.
Tag somebody out at home?
I mean, that you can do, but I guess you better not have coronavirus, right? I mean, which who knows if you do, because if your wife or whatever went grocery shopping on a Friday, and that was the last day, you know, and then you get tested on, I don't know, a Monday, and there's a 24-hour turnaround time, it may not be until Tuesday until you find out whether or not, you know, you infected the Braves. Like, so,
Well, the growing theory is if you have it, you're immune. Like, that hasn't been for sure proven, but that seems to be what people are thinking. And when they tested Major League Baseball, I think it was less than 1% came back positive.
Right.
So basically the entire league can still get it.
Right.
So this thing could spread and spread very quickly if one person gets it. Like, everybody was like, oh, it's good. Nobody in baseball got it. They could play. I'm like, no, that's actually a bad thing.
Yeah. And so, like, So now, like, you know, Major League Baseball, again, they're trying to, at least in the protocol, they are outlining different social distancing protocol, or procedure, rather, you know, for you know, inside ballparks. One of them being, like, creating, like, all these auxiliary clubhouses, which you may have to make a lot of them, given how many people they're going to need rotating in and out due to probably a spike in injuries, because it's just a weird year. And I believe in Korea, actually, there's been a spike of, like, hamstring injuries.
Yeah, there has.
Between that and, you know, just everyone getting sick, there's going to be a construction cost to that, you know? These are publicly owned stadiums. So I'm really curious, honestly, like, whose tax dollars will pay for, like, you know, renovation of, like, you know, the bowels of Citi Field to create, you know, let's say two extra, you know, auxiliary club, you know, locker rooms. Because, like, if you've ever been in, or at least, like, you know, look closely, like, if you're watching, like, a pre- or post-game interview, you know, post-game interview, I guess, like, you can't socially distance in a locker room. Your butt to elbows with all your teammates, you know?
I know they tried before the season where they would bring the players out to you, and then you had to, like, be behind a rope, but then all the reporters were huddled next to each other.
Oh, yeah, yeah. They did that for the press, but I'm saying, like, just among players. Like, you know, they can't socially distance inside their own spaces, you know?
Yeah.
So I'm just really affirming your point that this is going to spread extremely quickly if the season does indeed happen, in my opinion, you know, and they don't radically overhaul their policy. But if they do, if they add more, that only accentuates the other problem of is maybe possible, but is it, like, ethical to, you know, they're already estimating, you know, up to 14,000 tests being burned a week on baseball. That was Dan Hamlin, the deputy commissioner of Major League Baseball, said that to ESPN. So if they do more, which they would need to in order to actually do this safely, you know, more not just for the people who are covered persons, but also, like, the janitors and, you know, bus drivers, you know, inside the stadium, like, then, you know, and then all the PPE that's also, you know, personal protective equipment, for those who aren't unfamiliar with the acronym, you know, things like masks, which are in short supply in some areas. Philadelphia is in short supply of the N95, is that right?
Yeah.
Mask that, like, you know, that is, like, the recommended mask for, I guess safety, you know, in these spaces. Procuring all these tests plus all of the PPE, when, like, again, you know, curves are rising in many of the markets that Major League Baseball plays in or the states, you may have situations where, like, the Diamondbacks, again, are running through thousands of tests a week, but, like, Navajo Nation, a few hundred miles, you know, further north in the state is like being, like, wiped out by coronavirus and not having enough adequate, like, you know, testing or equipment with which to, you know, keep the, you know, to really flatten their curve. Like, it's going to be a really bad look, you know, like, if they actually choose to move forward with this. But Major League Baseball, of course, is not leading with their commitment to health and safety, because to have a true fine-tooth comb, like, you know, evaluating their claims and either the feasibility or the ethics behind it would leave them horribly exposed in negotiations. And my personal hope is that the players really become the help, you know, really uphold the importance of health and safety and use finances as sort of, like, running downstream from that. Because if it's a health and safety issue, then they are truly essential workers, as, again, the Department of Homeland Security just said, then they're entitled not to pay cuts, but they have to pay.
Yeah.
Like, you know, we're putting our lives on the line to uplift the country's spirits. All right, F you, pay me. Like, and also you guys don't give a damn about us or the people making $27,000, you know, a season or whatever, or less than that probably if you're poor or whatever, to clean ballparks.
Yeah, exactly.
Also, you brought up a good point that they're still traveling. Like, even though New York is going down, they still have to go to other parts. That, like, it's not the NBA is all staying in Disney, but I think baseball is still planning on traveling, right?
I can't believe I'm saying this, but the Arizona-Florida solution is better than this.
Yeah.
Like, I can't believe it.
Let's bring back Arizona.
That was so stupid. Excuse me. I was like a Stephen A. sort of like, you know, new octave I reached. But it's so dumb. And, but yeah, like, this is, you know, but that was really dumb. And that this is, you know, moderately better than the current travel plans. I remember Bob Nightingale, the way he framed it was that the current realignment, you know, would reduce travel because you're doing like East, Central, West. Mm-hmm. But like, you know, but the East, the new East division would have Toronto and Miami in the same playing in the same division.
Yeah,
that's a really long way. That's cross country travel. That will require, in fact, that would require exemptions to current protocol on whether or not you should quarantine after. You know, coming in or entering the country, unless you want, again, the entire Blue Jays swing, you know, 26 men down whenever they come into town.
You just have like, to have two different 25-man rosters that alternate every 2 weeks.
Yeah. Split squad, right?
And job creation.
Hey, job, here we go. That would be what the A's pitch to their minor leaguers in Upang.
They'll pay them an exposure.
Like it's all, no, yeah, right? It's all good, though. It's all good.
Exposure to the virus.
You're all going to be major leaguers this year. You're going to make like 12% of your normal salary, of your normal major league salary, which is so it'll be very familiar to you. And then, but you know, but maybe you'll start a pension if we're still paying pensions. You know, who knows what's going to come? And you know, and again, yeah, yes, right. But paying exposure. So that maybe that's the way of selling this to. Their minor league labor. You want to be a star kid, like suit up and fight for your country.
Yep, minor leaguers are getting the huge shaft in all of this, obviously. Like Maggie
A's
mentioned,
just announced. Yeah, sorry.
The A's just announced that they're going to stop paying their minor leaguers now. They had been paying them $400 a month, right? Is that what they were paying them?
I think it was a week.
A week. Good. Mm-hmm. At least it was per week. But still, but it that's
will
not also
it will save the organization somewhere in the realm of $1 million, and the A's owner is worth $2 billion with a B. So one would think that, you know, you could just find a rounding error somewhere and make those hundreds of people not, you know, unemployed and potentially starving or losing their homes or unable to afford medical care. You know, you'd think.
But Maggie, if there are no fans at the games, whatever will happen to the billionaires?
Yeah, well, somebody
please think of the billionaires.
Oh,
just
boy.
A reminder of what the job creation class is really all about. And it's not creating jobs. That is at best a side effect. That was a pretty depressing announcement.
Like, they're the one, like, the billionaires are always like, you buy the team, you just accept the risk, and now when the risk, you know, is there, they're like, no, it's not our problem. Like, that just is inherent in any business.
I mean, not to get too overtly political, but privatize the profits and socialize the losses has been the policy in this country for a very long time.
Right. Yeah. And that's exactly what's happening.
I'm not exactly shocked that baseball is now making it explicit because it's right here in front of us.
Yep. It's just become increasingly like more and more we're seeing like the dirty like business behind the sport, and that was already true before all of this, obviously, with the increasing, you know, nerfing of free agency and all of that stuff, constantly cutting corners whenever possible, but this has just poured gasoline on this fire. And if there is baseball in 2020, which there might be, I wouldn't be surprised if we don't see baseball again because there's a labor stoppage.
They're just speeding up the labor stoppage.
Yep. That's exactly what's happening. They're just forcing the strike to come sooner. The strike is going to come. There might be baseball in 2020, but then there's just going to be a strike. So then there's not going to be baseball after that.
Oh God.
although tiering the players like that in terms of the level of pay cut they're expected to take, that can also seed resentment between players. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure that's part of the thinking behind it because, you know, the owners don't want a strong union. The owners don't want players to, you know, have each other's backs. That doesn't add to their bottom line.
Yep. No, that's the goal. That is so blatantly the goal with this. It's to mm-hmm. turn the stars, the brightest stars of the game against the rest of the guys and make them the bad guys in their eyes instead of the owners. That's absolutely the goal here.
Are you troubled by strange hockey trades in the middle of the night?
Do you experience feelings of dread about NHL free agency?
Have you or your family ever seen a New York Islanders game?
If the answer is yes, then don't wait another minute. Pick up your mobile device and subscribe to Lighthouse Hockey Podcast from SB Nation today.
Our courteous and efficient hosts are ready to serve all of your Islander needs and worries.
Lighthouse Hockey Podcasts for New York Islanders fans.